Hello
Hello
there.
there. Welcome back to another episode of Star Wars in a Galaxy, watching all the Star Wars we can get our hands on. I'm Eli.
I'm Jacob.
And today we got a very special episode coming on behalf of my co-host over here, Jacob. I'm so glad he came up with this idea. I'm very excited to explore this idea. We're in a weird limbo period with Star Wars in a Galaxy. Let me explain what's going on. We're doing a limbo period. We're doing like a bunch of special episodes now. After this one, and I think one more, I think we'll be on a hiatus for a week or two, I think, while Jacob and I get some stuff sorted out in our own lives. And then we will be back with season 12 and a half of In a Galaxy, which is going to be Tales of the Jedi. And then after that, we are going to be back with season 13 of Star Wars In a Galaxy, which is season two of The Bad Batch. We want to delay The Bad Batch as much as we could because we want to have a little distance between that season. Because it released so soon before we analyze it, because we're not a like a reaction podcast, and no shade to those who are. That's just not who we are and not what we do. And so we decided that we wanted to delay it, but so that's gonna be coming probably the majority of this summer is going to be Bad Batch season two with In a Galaxy. So
Yeah, we just want to give it a little time to land, a little bit of time to
yeah.
marinate before we dive in.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And coupled with the fact that Jacob and I have now both done a review of the entire season, like a retrospective episode on Father Son Galaxy, and I that's actually also on one from the Nerd Academy podcast very recently. We also wanted to let those two marinate for a while. And thanks to the crews from both shows for having us on. We really appreciate when anybody invites us on. We're incredibly honored. We never thought we'd get there. Honestly.
Yeah, it's pretty surreal every time. But today we have good old fashioned versus series, Clone
Absolutely.
Wars.
Versus series.
Clone Wars versus Star Wars Rebels. So what we're gonna do today, something that we used to like to do a lot before, maybe before our In a Galaxy days, I think. Just what character would win in a fight,
Yeah,
Star Wars,
absolutely.
there's a fighting aspect to it. It's in the
Yeah.
name.
And absolutely go and a couple of disclaimers before we get into this. First of all, it will be Clone Wars characters versus Rebels characters because those are
Yes.
our respective favorite Star Wars TV shows. I will encourage a bunch of things. If you want to see more in-depth analysis, like we're going to be going through these decently quickly, but I think we'll still do some decent analysis on this. If you want some like really in-depth thorough analysis, we recommend checking out Knights of the Republic's Patreon, where they do very in-depth analysis on their Versus series. Jared, who is a good friend of mine, is done like he comes from all the same Versus series background that we do. He and his partner in crime, Spencer, they do really great work over there. And second of all, do you know who would really win in every one of these fights, Jacob?
Who?
Whoever the writer wants to win. Yeah,
Obviously,
I just want
that's
to make
granted.
that
That's
clear.
granted.
I just want to make that clear to everybody because I just want to make sure that our opinions are just that. They're our opinions.
Yeah.
We probably will disagree on things, and we're not arguing about anything that's objective. Nothing.
Oh, I mean.
Because if one of these characters walked out, like if we had a character a two characters with a huge power differential, or so we thought. Then the one with the lower power, or so we thought, went up in an issue of a comic that came out, say, tomorrow, and absolutely wrecked the combatant of supposedly higher power. Then that wouldn't like that would affect us. We would not affect it. We would absolutely take that into consideration, not the other way around. We are not beholden to anything other than the source material. And the source material governs all.
Yeah, I think what we're doing here, what the usual hypothetical is when someone says, "Oh, who would win in a fight?" That's not really how it actually goes ever in this story. It's never a 3-2-1 go, two people in a arena, duking it out, however you choose to see it. That's not how it actually goes. So I agree. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just, I think it's just important to know because I think sometimes people do take that step and do say, and do have their like minds a little damaged by the idea of like, oh, I thought X would win over Y, but in this story, Y won over X. That can't be possible. Anything's possible.
Yeah. Yeah, anything's possible. You know, two characters going head to head is not the same thing as whatever the circumstances may be in any given story.
Absolutely. So yeah, but these are all characters on one side from Rebels and all Kurds on the other side from the Clone Wars, and that will take care of eras within themselves. And obviously, because it would be boring, we haven't chosen any two characters that have faced off before in said formats or in said eras. You know what I mean?
Yeah. We have to keep it a little bit clean that way. Yeah. Make it more interesting as well.
Keep it interesting. All right. So Jacob and I we'll do probably three or four each from our lists, and we'll talk about them, and you know, we'll see how this goes. If you know, if we like doing this, if this gets popular, we'll do more of this stuff because I really do like doing this stuff. And I know Jacob, who I thought was the one who liked this doing this stuff less, was actually the one to request it. So like,
I love doing this stuff.
Yeah, no, I know. I didn't doubt you like doing this stuff. I just thought like this was like a particular nerdy passion of mine for like say like 5 years ago, and I still have that little bit of that stuff left in me. Yeah.
No, this goes back to the YouTube channel days.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
So yeah, where do we do you want to give us your first one, Eli?
I was gonna have you go first to go.
Oh, all right.
Go with one of your spectacular battles.
With pleasure. So I wrote up more than we can do. So this is a tough choice about which ones I want to include, but I want to start off with one that I think could be pretty interesting, and that is, who would win in a fight, Sabine Wren or Captain Rex?
Ah, yes. So this is one of our few non-Force user ones, which I think always makes it a little tougher to call for me, because we're not necessarily judging them by the same metrics as much, but that doesn't mean it's impossible. I was figuring how we'd do this, and tell me if you have any other ideas, but like, I was thinking we'd go over like the positives, like what each character has in their corner, what advantages they have.
Yeah, you know, what they...
Yeah, what they bring to the table.
What they bring to the table, what are their drawbacks.
Yeah, yeah, I was going to say strengths, weaknesses, and then, yeah.
How would they match up?
You know, and how would the battle go and all that kind of stuff?
Regardless of like how powerful or how skilled or how experienced you think one character or another is, matchups do exist. Like just because one character has vastly more experience, you know, the matchup does make for unique situations.
Yeah. So when are you thinking of Rex from, and when are you thinking of like specifically from in TCW and Sabine specifically in Rebels? Because it matters.
So I think for the sake of this, we'll just say kind of around the end of each. So we can say season four Sabine. We'd say season seven Rex, I guess.
Rex, season four Sabine. Now
I think no Darksaber.
Yeah, I was going to say, you literally just read my mind. I'm like, I need to make an important distinction. Does she have the Darksaber? Because if she does, this makes it a drastically different fight than if she doesn't.
Yeah, no, I think no Darksaber. I think that makes it much more even and in the spirit of the fight, you know, where you have two, you know, non-force using characters. They don't have an energy blade.
They got the dual pistols.
They got the armor. You know, that's kind of why I wanted these two to go up against each other.
So season seven, and here's another question for you. And I know that our friends over at the Nerd Academy podcast put a lot of stock into this, and I hadn't tended to, but I think it does kind of matter. Let's talk about where this is taking place.
This might be crazy. What about that big square in Coruscant in Mandalorian? Because like it's a wide open space. They've got some tables and some chairs. You know, if people want to throw things around, if people want to duck for cover, they can. They can, you know, jump up on the walls.
And obviously it'll be deserted.
Too,
yeah.
But you can't really, we could say, you know, maybe you can't go out of bounds, you know, can't just
Yeah.
go flipping
Absolutely.
out of
Yeah.
wherever. I don't know, because it's something where
Yeah.
we want to imagine the
Got it.
characters can use the environment to their advantage without it
Yeah.
becoming about the environment. That's what
Yeah,
I think when I think
absolutely.
about trying to pit two characters against each other in a hypothetical such as this. That's just me though. Everyone has different ways of
Yeah.
doing it, and that's
No,
perfectly fine, but that's me.
I agree with you. I think that both ends of the extremes, like we obviously don't want the fight to be about the environment, but I also just thinking put think putting it in general in like a flat ring is just kind of boring.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I think this is a good mix of both then.
Yeah. So I tend to go for that middle ground. Yeah, but so let's go to Rex then. What does Rex have going for him?
So, first off, with Rex, I think at this point he's a professional soldier. He's one
Yeah.
of the elite. He's the leader of the 501st. He's got a ton of experience. He's very seasoned tactically. He's very strong. He's proven that he has great hand-to-hand chops. You know, he's a
Yeah.
sharp shot.
He's a sharp
Yeah, I
shot, and
think
I would
he's
also say
just a
that
really great clone trooper.
I would also just say that he has learned from maybe not one of the best, like most powerful Jedi in the war, but definitely one of the most tactically genius. Like Anakin Skywalker. I mean, look, does he get himself into a lot of messes? Yes, he
Yes.
does. I'm not gonna deny that. But it's the way that he gets himself out of said messes. It's the way that it's the like he has this like, and again, I'm not saying it always works. Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. But you know, there have been some crazy strategies that he has used to snatch victory from what looks like the jaws of a pretty clear defeat. I'm thinking of stuff like when they recovered a cup in the unknown. Or you know when they or their plan for or Anakin's plan that broke the blockade above Ryloth, or trying to think of another example. Oh, frankly, breaking into the Citadel at all is something that had never been done before, period, in its 600-year history, I think, or something like that. 500-600-year history, and Anakin and with Rex alongside him did it. Yeah, he's extremely experienced. He's extremely. He is not like in a fight against another non-force user, this guy's not going to go down easily.
No, absolutely. Absolutely not. You
He's
know,
he is incredibly experienced. He knows what he's doing.
yeah, what did Rex himself said it. Experience outranks
Outweighs
everything.
every
And
outweighs everything, yeah.
he has tons of experience. Absolutely tons. He's picked up so much from Obi-Wan, Anakin, Ahsoka, all the experiences that he's been in. How about Sabine? What does
Well,
she
I was
bring
gonna
into
go
the
with
mix?
weaknesses for Rex
Oh,
next.
weaknesses for Rex.
Yeah.
I think his it compared to Sabine, I think his armor is a big weakness. You know, he has the
Armor.
clone
Yeah.
plastic, kind of plasticky armor, not exactly sure what it is, but
Yeah.
it doesn't really, it's not really gonna help him, you know, take a blaster bolt the same way that Sabine's Beskar
Yeah.
alloy armor
I will
would.
also say that I will also say a few things. First of all, with Rex's, you know, tactical and genius and all that kind of stuff, I do believe that will help him in any situation. Though a part of me does wonder how much of that was based towards like one-on-one fights versus leadership and like, you know, being the captain of a battalion. You know what I mean?
True.
How much that is going to transfer over to a one-on-one fight? I think Rex is one of Rex's big greatest strengths is that he is a very good leader. But that's not going to help
Yes.
him here because there's no one to lead.
Yeah, I still think that his tactical knowledge and his ability to improvise in the field and perform under pressure is still, that still would definitely help him.
Oh, absolutely. I'm not denying that. I just think that, you know,
Yeah.
It I think it will help him, but maybe not as much as we were making it out to be earlier.
Yeah, perhaps, perhaps. Well, should we talk
I'm
about
skeptical,
Sabine now?
Yeah.
So we could talk about how they match up. So,
yeah. Sabine, for me, I guess. Or you want to go first with Sabine?
Yeah, so I think, obviously, first off, her armor. It's unclear, I think, based on what I remember of Rebels, it's unclear whether her armor, although she certainly has the advantage in terms of armor, what her armor would be able to absorb, although it doesn't have as much coverage as Rex, it's unclear to me, honestly, whether her armor is fully Beskar, whether it's pure Mandalorian steel, the way that Din Djarin's is, for example, because we see Din Djarin, hunkering down, tanking dozens of blaster bolts and just ping, ping, ping going off him. Sabine, on the other hand, there's a scene in the Siege of Lothal when she shoots two shots at Darth Vader. Darth Vader deflects them back. They hit her head. They hit her helmet, and she goes down. Yeah. So, and obviously she's relatively unharmed. I think she's shaken up. So, it's unclear to me exactly how her armor works, especially since you see the plates, flex and stretch with her movement, some of the, like the shoulder plates, for example. Now that might just be Rebels stylistically what they choose to do, what the art department and the animators choose to do. So I wouldn't put too much stock into that, but I'm not gonna sit here and talk about Sabine's armor like it's some like it's a get out of jail free card, because I don't think it is, although I do think it is an asset for her.
I think it's absolutely not. I think that I looked it up, and I don't know if you remember this little detail, but this was said, I believe, in the beginning of season 4 of Star Wars Rebels. But that Sabine's armor is 500 years old.
Oh, yes, yes, I remember. It was
and
forged
so,
and reforged.
Yeah, it has been forged and reforged over and over again, which makes me doubt it. Again, not that it doesn't still have Beskar on it, and not that Beskar is going to be any worse than Beskar is going to be, but I'm kind of imagining her armor in this way like Din's armor was pre-Chapter 3 of The Mandalorian.
Where it's not...
Because he definitely still had Beskar on there. Maybe she had a little bit more Beskar than he did, but I don't think either of them are 100% or even close to 100% Beskar.
Because I'm operating. I'm running into a problem where I can't remember where I heard this. Was it a third party? Was it a YouTuber? Was it someone else speculating, or was it from, a primary source, a piece of Star Wars media? But I do remember. I'm operating under the idea that not all Mandalorian armor is 100% Beskar. Maybe there's Beskar, there's alloys and it's a rare material, presumably it can be mixed with other materials. Not all the armor is created equal. And that's why we see maybe Mando, kind of upgrading his suit with different pieces. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, it's a good question. And I think that, there is stuff. I'm gonna say there is stuff we don't. There is stuff we obviously do not know about Beskar, and Beskar often, and it's, I think we've seen this a lot with the Mandalorian. In the Mandalorian, and we're recording this, I think by the time this releases, Chapter 24 of the Mandalorian will be out, but it's not out right now. It's coming out a few days after we record this, so. We don't know what's going to happen, and things could change. But, if we're looking at Chapter 23, the spies, and this is what I was going to say about Beskar and the Mandalorian, is that I feel like Beskar in the Mandalorian is the strength of the plot.
That's fair.
I think Beskar is about as strong as the plot needs it to be. And I think that's fine from a storytelling perspective, but for this kind of thing causes us a few problems because, we obviously see Din run into that like we see Din run into the hovel of what used to be the client's like base, like run through dozens of stormtroopers getting shot over and over again in the season finale of season one of The Mandalorian. But then we see like Din and Bo-Katan and Paz and, you know, all of the Mandalorians, including Axe Wobbs, Koska Reeves, all those people, you know, gun down those Beskar dark troopers, Beskar armored dark troopers with their own blasters, which I'm sure are better than the Stormtrooper C-11s from the Imperial Remnant in season one, but like how much better? And it's still Beskar. Like, but they gun them down pretty easily, is my point. Like, it's more challenging than usual, but like, they finished off that first horde of Beskar armor stormtroopers in a good 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Like, it's more challenging than normal, but it is by no means an actual challenge. So you know, that's two very, very different strengths of Beskar. So, yeah, I'm just wondering how much of it is Beskar, and I think that determines it. But let's start talking about the armor. Let's talk about Sabine, the fighter, because I think she's a very interesting fighter. I think she has a very, very good knowledge of everything technical. I think of the Ghost crew, I think she is the most technologically inclined.
Absolutely. Absolutely. She's a born tinkerer. You know, she was creating crazy advanced, you know, never before seen weapons of war when she was what, 15, 16? Yeah. Like,
she's a technological genius. And I also think that her ingenuity also transfers over to her combat sensibilities, because even for a Mandalorian, and Mandalorians are known to be very, very like individualistic, unorthodox fighters. But even for a Mandalorian, I think Sabine is very, very unique and ingenuitive in the way she fights. Things like in Imperial Super Commandos, where she blasts the feedback frequency to the Super Commandos to disrupt their feed, or how she defeats the battle droids in Ghosts of Geonosis with, I think, Rex underground at that point, actually. Or, you know, things like, I was going to say The Last Battle, but she was not in that episode. But yeah, I think she's her combat senses are extremely well rounded, and I think that's a and I think that is a big plus for her. Minuses for Sabine for me are a little less clear. Like, it's not that I don't think she has any weaknesses. She does. I'm just trying to figure out how I would identify them.
I think maybe it might be more useful to talk now about their strengths and weaknesses in comparison to one another, because that's what this is all about, right? So for example, while this isn't necessarily a drawback on its own or a glaring one, when we look at, like, we can think about, I don't know, I guess in the interest of time, I kind of want to get on to, like, figuring out, like, hashing out who do we think would take this. I think obviously this fight would start at range.
I think, well, first of all, I want to get some stuff out of the way. I think Rex has the advantage when it comes to experience.
Yes, Rex has the advantage when it comes to experience.
I think Sabine has the is the advantage when it comes to technical aspects.
I don't know. I think Rex, in terms of technology, you know, maybe certain improvisations, absolutely, but I think Rex
equally, I'm not saying Rex is a slouch by any means, I think that Sabine has the advantage technically, in that technologically in that scale. And I also think that Sabine, through her time, and this is just a product of the time she trained to fight. But I also think, and who knows how much this matters, I think Sabine has a advantage in mental fortitude.
Sabine.
Yeah, Sabine.
Really? Why?
Yeah.
Why do you think?
Here's the thing, and I don't think like mentally as a whole, but I think in terms of like actual like willpower and like ability to shrug off pain and stuff like that, Rex was fighting in a time where the clones under his command were mostly winning. They were
That's
mostly
not true
winning.
At all. If we look at
at least the fights that Rex was in, they were
throughout
mostly
the Clone
winning.
Wars, that's I
at
don't
least
think
the fights
that's
that
true. If we look at if we look at the stories that the Clone Wars is telling, I don't necessarily think that we can say that for sure.
I'm not saying
But
that the
if
clones in
what,
general were
what's
mostly
your argument?
winning.
I'll hear you out. What are you trying to say? What are you trying to say?
Rex being at the behest of Anakin Skywalker, who was one of the most successful generals in the war, was mostly winning. And I'm not saying that that means he was all the time winning. There were notable times where he was, but Rex, think about all the times that Rex got captured in the Clone Wars. It wasn't that many times. Sabine won a lot of the time on her missions, but I think there was a less of a sense for Sabine and the Ghost crew that winning was inevitable, or that winning was certain to happen, because they were the underdogs.
I think the clones were almost, even in the battles they won, if you look at the Clone Wars, the way they were telling the story, the clones are almost always the underdogs in these
maybe in
stories,
terms
the
of
Eli. Take that
numerical
into consideration. Not
maybe
just
in
in
terms
terms
of
not just in term not just in terms of numerical. I'm talking about the plots. Look at the plots of the Clone Wars. I think you'll see that a lot of them, the clones are clearly portrayed as the underdogs most of the time. You know, they have to, their backs are more often than not against the wall, and they have to figure out, you know, how to prevail against all odds.
Yeah. And I don't think Rex is weak by any stretch of the imagination. I don't. But I think that Sabine has had more of the idea of coming from that underdog mentality. And I think that, though I do think in terms of mental aspects, I do think Rex has a bit of an advantage with focus. I think Sabine has an advantage on like willpower and like, pushing through it. But I think Rex has a clear advantage with focus, because I think Sabine has often gotten lost in the craziness of the battle. And I'm not saying this is as just specifically shading Sabine. This is a hard thing to maintain, and many people who are stronger fighters than Sabine have had difficulty maintaining this. But it's a really close fight, I think.
Yeah, I think neither one of, I think both these, both Rex and Sabine are savvy and capable enough to not get taken out at range. They can use cover. Sabine's very agile, Rex is very tactically savvy. I think it's to me, it's pretty clearly going to come down to hand to hand. I think,
oh, for me, it's,
it's
the
gonna,
co-
it's
I think
gonna
it's
come
gonna...
down to some type of,
yeah, maybe
you know,
hand to hand, or
hand-to-hand
maybe some sort of
fisticuffs.
Like, maybe hand to hand, or for me, I think it would come down to some sort of like, I feel like it would be a cat and mouse game between the two of them. And I feel like it would just take one moment of one of them temporarily slipping up in one minor way, and the other one would seize the advantage. And I think I know, in my opinion, who would do that. But
who do you, okay.
Go ahead.
Okay.
Who would take it?
This is difficult, but I'm gonna go with Rex for this one. I think that his experience and the tactical knowledge and ability that he demonstrated through seven long seasons of the Clone Wars, I think give him an edge. And then, you know, if it comes to, you know, trading blows, close range, I think obviously Sabine is no slouch, you know. We see
oh,
her,
no, absolutely not.
You know, we see her beat the absolute bejesus out of who knows how many stormtroopers in Rebels. However, I just think that Rex, you know, at his peak. You know, he's a professional soldier. And Sabine, you know, she is a teenager at the end of the day. So I think Rex's advantage in strength, and his advantage in strength and conditioning alone, I think, combined with his experience, would take the edge in hand-to-hand once it gets that close. So I'm going with Rex.
Yeah, I actually was inclined to go with Rex as well. I'm going with Rex as well, just because I think that his... I think also, this is another thing that I didn't consider, but is also true. I think the variety of situations that Rex has been is greater than the variety of situations absolutely. Sabine has been in. And I think he knows just a bit better how to adapt to situations when they're either A, going his way, or B, very rarely not going his way. But I think that I think it's going to be very close, and I think there are definitely situations where Sabine takes it. But I think But I think that for me, it comes down to like there are just moments where Rex, through Anakin's teachings and through Ahsoka's teachings, really has managed, and of course through his own ingenuity, have managed to snatch victory from the jaws of what inevitably seems like defeat. I think the thing that really seals it for Rex for me here is Rookies. If you look at that entire episode, is basically like obviously Heavy, Echo, and Five were huge parts of that episode succeeding. But Rex was a really important asset to like that was when it became clear that not only might they be able to escape, they also might be able to win when Rex came in with Cody, obviously. But with Echo and Heavy and Fives, it was clear that they were going to be able to survive. But with Rex, they were going to be able to win. So yeah, I would go with Rex very narrowly here. This is not easy at all. But yeah, that's what I'm going with.
All right. Who do you have? All right, who's your first matchup?
This is a fun one. From the Clone Wars, we're going to go with season, like, we're going end-ish. So yeah, we'll do season 6, season 7-ish. Ki-Adi-Mundi,
okay. Season 7, Ki-Adi-Mundi, all right.
Versus, maybe, in my opinion, I think the most underrated Inquisitor of all time, the Eighth Brother.
Okay.
Ki-Adi versus the Eighth Brother. Now, here's the thing. It's going to be interesting with both of them because we have very little information about both of them. If we're looking about actual battle experience in like TCW standards and Rebel standards, we have Malachor for Eighth Brother, and we have Geonosis, at least the first half of that arc, for Mundi, and that's really it.
Neither of those were particularly good showings.
No, but they weren't awful, and I think that Eighth Brother gets a bad rap too. But we'll get into that. Let's go to Ki-Adi-Mundi.
All right, I don't know a ton about Ki-Adi-Mundi. What is his form?
His form is Form 4. He uses a Taru. He uses the lightsaber form of a Taru. Which I think for him is going to be less of the somersaults, because I think he is generally an older man. I don't know what actually. Do we have a canon age for Mundi? I don't think we do. No, we don't.
I'm looking on Wikipedia. We don't know when he was born.
Let's look at the Legends tab so we have an idea of how old he's supposed to be. When he dies, he's in his 70s.
We know at the very least at the time of Order 66.
In Legends, he was in his 70s. And of course, they've changed ages around in canon. But I'm going to assume roughly the same age, maybe a bit younger. So I'm going to go with late 60s, early 70s. He was 74 in Legends when he died. I'm going to assume anywhere from like in between 65 and 75. Somewhere in that ballpark. And, you know, he's very experienced, obviously, in Form 4.
Yes. How about the fifth?
Oh wait, actually, shit. Never mind, I forgot. He uses a bit of Form 4. He uses a bit of form too, as well.
Yeah, I thought. Okay.
He uses a bit of Ataru, a bit of Makashi. I remember this because you can also switch his forms in Galaxy of Heroes. That's part of his kit. they made a decent part of his kit, which is switching forms between Makashi and Akashi and Ataru. Let's look at I'm gonna look at his powers and abilities in Legends section on Wikipedia just to see. It also says in Legends that he is a master of Form 3, but I'm not so sure about that one.
So we know he can do a little bit of a few forms.
He is very proficient with a lightsaber, and I think that's going to be one of his greatest advantages in this fight, is that his skill with the lightsaber is extremely prodigious. The one thing that's hard about this is that, of course, his only battlefield experience that we know of two battlefield experiences for him at the height of his power. Number one was Geonosis, which, with the help of the clones, was a decisive victory. But then again, he wasn't facing any other armed force users. And then, of course, we have Magito, which was going to be a decisive victory for the Republic, until Bakara and all of his men kind of ruined that one.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's fair to assume, given that he was on the battlefield at the time of Order 66, given that he was on the battlefield in Season 2 of the Clone Wars, I think it's fair to assume that he was out there quite a bit on the front lines.
Absolutely. I don't think that just because we've never seen him in a lightsaber duel doesn't mean he can't win one. But it does give us a bit of a lack of things to work with. Whereas Eighth Brother, even though he's lost all the duels he's been in, he's still been in them. So we still know a bit more about how he operates.
Fair enough. And what about the Eighth Brother? What do we know about him? Because
Very little.
Beyond the Twilight of the Apprentice, that's where my knowledge ends for the Eighth Brother.
I believe that's it. I believe that's all he's seen. He has that, first of all, he's a Tirellian Jango jumper. Mundi's a Saurian, he's a Tirellian Jango jumper. And as we've seen from TCW, those things, like, that species is very, very agile, and that is a, what was I gonna say? Yeah, that was a thing. He obviously wielded his double-bladed lightsaber. And obviously he does the spinning thing, the going round and round. He can also do that thing where he can have like spikes pull out of it and activate it like basically like a buzzsaw.
Yeah.
He also has some detonators that he can use. I'm not exactly sure about what his form would be. Let me look, actually. I want to look at some footage of the Eighth Brother to see if I can see what his form could be. Let's see. Yeah, there's... I'm watching him face down Ahsoka and Kanan, which obviously doesn't go well. Oh, wait, actually, let's do... Yeah, Ahsoka, Ezra, and Kanan are attacked by the Eighth Brother here. Let's do this. Yeah. Oh, he looks extremely... It's... Yeah, and he's firing the... Yeah. He's firing the detonators almost instantly. Yeah. That seems pretty clear to me. That looks very Ataru-based. Looks very Ataru-based. Looks Anaiman-based a little bit because of his...
He has the double-bladed. So
because the double-bladed, and also because he's integrating other things into his fighting style, not just the saber. He's very energetic. He's obviously, and we don't know this, we don't know this, but come on, he obviously has the age advantage over Mundi because he's younger, which means he's going to gain fatigue a little less than Mundi is, or at a slower rate than Mundi is. He has the speed, he has the age, he has the speed, he has the agility over Mundy. Mundy, again, it comes down to Mundy has that experience, has the refinement, has the battlefield experiences. Mundy's won more, but not in lightsaber duels. Eighth Brother has lost more, but it's been in actual lightsaber duels. And they were, and it was against, and he lost against Ahsoka Tano and Maul, who were two of the most powerful Force users of that era. So this one's also a tough one.
You think it's tough? All right, I'll let you go first then, because I don't think it's particularly tough.
I mean, I don't think it's actually that tough, but I think I know which one I'm going with, and I think that, you know, this is interesting, because I used to regard Ki-Adi Mundi more highly than I do now, because I remember one of the battles that was happening when I was tuning into a Nerd Academy podcast game, was they were doing Mundi versus Grandy. And Grandy, they were very convinced that Grandy was winning that one easily. And I was still a bit
swayed. I think Grand Inquisitor versus Mundi is a completely different... Yeah. That's a completely different question.
But ask me 3 years ago, and I said Ki-Adi Mundi would have absolutely slaughtered the Grand Inquisitor. And now I no longer think that. But I think Mundi does take this one.
Yeah. Well, it's also a matchup question, because, you know, Ki-Adi Mundi, I think, more powerful, experienced Force user, no doubt, than the Grand Inquisitor. But, you know, the Grand Inquisitor, he's a trained hunter and killer of Jedi. That's his profession.
I think Mundy's definitely more experienced than Grandy.
Doesn't really have any dueling experience.
Yeah.
We can assume.
I'm not sure if, I think that Mundy's more experienced than Grandy. I'm not sure if he's more powerful, like, in the Force than Grandy. I think that's debatable.
I would assume so, given that he's on the High Council. I don't know, though. So I assume, what's your verdict?
Yeah, my verdict is Mundy. Mundy wins. I want to set the, like, arena. Let's go. Actually, I have a good one. Let's do the Dune Sea.
Okay.
Dune Sea, Tatooine. You know.
So they're slipping in the sand.
What I was meant to say is the Jundland Wastes. You know, the rocky areas, the Jundland Wastes.
There's a good bit of verticality. There's some topography, but ultimately it's pretty open space.
Open terrain, yeah. And I think that what it will ultimately come down to is that Aeth's biggest greatest advantages in the fights we saw him in Malachor, which even then he did terribly in, was the element of the shock and awe, the element of oh shit, there's an Inquisitor here, of and oh, he has a double-bladed lightsaber, and oh, the hilt's bladed, and oh, he has these grenades. And I think that that might put Mundi on the back pedal for a few minutes, but once he knows that that's what Aeth's gonna do, Aeth has nothing over him. So I think it's gonna come down to, I think Mundi is obviously, at least to me, more powerful in the Force than the Eighth Brother. And I think that I also think that Mundi's probably a bit better tactically, at least a bit better tactically than Aeth is, because Aeth, you know, tries to do, like, Aeth's eventual death in Rebels is because he tried to fly away on his Hellsaber and then it broke and he fell. Like, it wasn't even because he was defeated in a duel. It was because he didn't realize that his lightsaber was too broken to fly. But yeah, ultimately, I think that Mundi takes this one. I think it's less close than Sabine and Rex would be. I think I think this might be one of the less close fights, actually. I think, yeah.
I agree. I don't think this would be particularly close at all, personally. Ki-Adi Mundi, he was on the High Council. you know, we have to assume that he was a pretty powerful Force user.
He had battlefield experience. Yes. I don't think you can definitively say just because he's on the High Council, he was like, he was X-Power. Like, Coleman Trevor was on the High Council. Do I think Coleman Trevor would beat the Eighth Brother in no universe?
Okay, well, I think based on what we've seen of Ki-Adi-Mundi, it's a reasonable assumption that he was a powerful Force user.
Oh, absolutely.
A level or two at least above the Eighth Brother. Apologize. Furthermore, I think the Eighth Brother is, based on what we've seen of him, completely unproven. Couldn't even do any damage against Season 2 Ezra, let alone Kanan or Ahsoka. So, or Maul, for that matter. Yeah. So I think it's not, you know, he might be more acrobatic, more athletic. He might have his grenades, but even though he is more trained for, you know, dueling combat, I imagine, than Ki-Adi-Mundi, just given in the era that Ki-Adi-Mundi came up in, where there weren't really any threats to the Jedi, I think Ki-Adi-Mundi's running away with this one, and it's not particularly close.
Yeah, but I will just say, like, and not to, you know, contradict you, like, that much or anything, I just, like, do want to point out that,
oh, you know, can contradict me. You can contradict me as much as you want. Yeah. That's what this is all about.
But, like, Ahsoka and Maul were the two main people who defeated Eighth Brother. They weren't exactly, like, it wasn't like he was getting slapped around by, like, an apprentice Jedi or, like, a barely That's knighted. True. Like, these were really powerful people. Even Ezra and Kanan, for the amount of training that they have, were ludicrously powerful in the Force. I'm not saying it would be close. I'm saying I don't think it would be a landslide. I think it'd be definitive. I don't think Ki-Adi-Mundi would win in 5 minutes. Maybe 15.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, Fair I'm enough. Just yeah. Yeah, go ahead with what's your next one? What do you want to do for your next one?
I'm gonna do one that I'm really not sure about, actually. All right. That I'm really not sure about, that I think you would probably have more insight on. Ahsoka, specifically season two Ahsoka.
Season two Ahsoka Tano.
Versus season two Ezra Bridger.
Ah, right. The apprentices of their time.
Now, the reason I think this is interesting is because, you know, wait, sorry, did I say season? No, I meant season three Ezra. Sorry,
season three Ezra.
So short Ezra. Once he has short hair, once he has his green lightsaber, once he takes the leap of steps into shadow, but not quite where he's at in season four. Compare that to Ahsoka. Yeah. You know, she's pretty fresh. She's pretty inexperienced, but she's still Ahsoka.
Yeah, like, it's.
She's pretty raw though, so, you know.
Yeah, that's a tricky one. I'm trying to think, like, what has Ahsoka done up to that point?
She's faced off against Grievous and lived to tell the tale.
That's the big one for me, is the Grievous really thing. Is that obviously when we get to Flash to season 5, she, like, almost defeats him, which is crazy enough. But, like, she fights Grievous and lives, which is not something that a fully trained Jedi Knight, like, not a few episodes later that season, was able to do. So, like,
yeah.
Granted,
it's not for very long. She just escapes.
No, but she's 14. She's 14, and this guy, a decade older than her, dies against Grievous after about 5 minutes of a lightsaber duel. Like, she's ludicrously powerful. Yeah, again, we see a lot of really powerful people with the Force in Star Wars. Ahsoka has a ludicrous amount of potential. I'm trying to think what else happens in the first season that we can the first two seasons that we can draw upon. Is Ahsoka involved with the? No, yeah, she is involved with the Holocronic heist stuff, but she does get defeated by Cad Bane, but that's like trickery and not exactly like. It's not exactly a fair, like, he pulls out one of his tricks at the last moment. So, like, I don't think that's exactly fair to analyze. And plus, he's not a Force user. She saves Luminara from Asajj Ventress. She saves a, like...
That is true, yeah.
She saves a council level... Not a council level. A Jedi Master. She's a fully trained Jedi Master from defeat by one of the most powerful Force users at that time, Asajj Ventress. And Cloak Darkness. Let's see, what else? She defends the Lorman village from the defoliator tank along with Anakin and Ayla. She indeed also does that. Let's look at season two. She freaking takes out that entire fucking ship filled with brainworms in that one arc. She defeats the super tank along with Ferris in Weapons Factory. Let's see what else she does. Well, there's Lightsaber Lost, which is that season. And although she does use her lightsaber, the way she goes about getting it back along with Master Sanube is very, very laudable. She's not on the Zillow Beast. She does take down Aura Singh. And we think she died, but she didn't. But she does take down Aura Singh, one of the most prolific bounty hunters of that time, along with Plo Koon. So she's got a lot to work with. She's no slouch, absolutely. We know Ahsoka. She's a form 4 Ataru, Ataru specialist to the max. Also Nyman specialist because of her dual blades, and even before she was she was Nyman, but like before that, I guess you could also say she was a Sheehan specialist because of the backhanded grip, which is form 5. Very good at blast deflection, not great for lightsaber combat, but that's where Ataru came in.
Form 5 is good for lightsaber combat, I think. That's okay.
Gemso is. Gemso variant is. Sheehan is mostly about blast deflection, but that's where the Ataru comes in.
My question, though, is just how much, like, you know, face-to-face, you know, lightsabers out experience has she gotten by season 2? She has a lot of experience in general, but for the kind of fight that we're talking about, I don't think she has that much. I think at this point, Ezra would have more dueling experience
probably
in this kind of scenario.
I would say, but probably.
I think Ahsoka would have overall more. Season 3 Ezra, you know, I think their overall experience levels might be about the same. I think in the first, Ahsoka has about as much experience maybe in the first 2 seasons as Ezra does in 3. I don't know if that's fair to say or not. I don't think.
Let's look at Ezra.
In terms of, like, you know, like combat, like demonstrate your mettle, demonstrate your grit type of experience. Yeah. Let's talk about Ezra now. Yeah.
Let's talk about Bridger.
I mean, at this point, he's taken his leap.
I'm trying to think what he's done. He didn't fare too great against Grandy at all through season 1. You know, he survived, which is more than you can say for a lot of people with Grandy, but he stands up to Grandy, and you know, he does better than I assume most would in that situation, but it's Kanan who really does the hard work against Grandy. And then, you know, we have things like with 5 and 7. You know, those are the main two antagonists throughout season 2, with 5 and 7. And it seems very much like he's able to keep pace with them, but there's never a point where it feels like Ezra has as much of a like as a dominance factor with 5 and 7.
He does work. He puts in work.
against 5 and 7. Yeah, absolutely. But it's never like a like, oh, if not for their sly and cunning tactics, he could win at any point if he really wanted to. Like it would be for somebody like Ahsoka. Like it feels like he probably has a bit of an advantage in terms of raw power. Against 5 and 7, but it's never like a dominant sense. It's never like a oh.
Raw. Wait, you think raw? You think season 2 Ezra had a power like overall power advantage over 5 and 7?
I'm not saying together. I'm saying like individually. If we're talking about individually, yeah. Ezra versus but, 5 I mean, or individually. Ezra versus 7. Because you know usually Kanan was there, but so I'm thinking about it like yeah. Against yeah. 5 and against I 5 think, and slash or 7, against 5 or 7, I think that Ezra has the ability to at least contend.
I disagree. I think if it came down to it, I think a distinction needs to be made between, you know, we have Ezra, I think, has a higher ceiling on what his power in the Force could be at that time, you know, what his potential is, what his overall, I think. And a lot of this just depends on the unspoken stuff that isn't really spelled out in Star Wars about how you view the Force. But I would say that, you know.
Well, first of all, let's establish the Inquisitors. Arena.
Okay. I'm going to do the same one, Jundlin Wastes. That seems like a pretty fair.
Let's do Forum.
Okay.
Yeah, Forum.
That's a nice spot for that. I like Forum.
Yeah. I mean, Ahsoka's been there a few times, but it's not like she has detailed analysis of the landscape or anything. But yeah, I think Forum's a good place just generally for it to be. But yeah. And then we have stuff like, you know, well first of all, what's Ezra's lightsaber form? I mean, I don't know. He's an Ataru specialist.
I don't know if it's been spelled out, but yeah, given what we've seen, I think
Wikipedia identifies it as Jemso.
I mean, I think that makes.
Oh yeah,
sense.
Ataru. I would say Ataru. Yeah. Ataru and Jemso.
Ataru and Jemso makes sense for me, given that you know he was taught by Kanan, so there's the Form 3 influence in the. And the Jemso's, given the situations that he was in, the emphasis on, you know, deflecting blaster bolts, obviously is something that would be very important. And you combine that with the acrobatics and the athleticism that he demonstrates. I think he has a similar style to Ahsoka, almost, I think.
Yeah.
If we really look at it.
I think that Ahsoka probably just because... I think Ahsoka probably would be a little bit younger at this point, but I think that age would make a little bit of a difference just in terms of, I think that Ezra's feet are probably going to be on the ground a decent amount more percentage-wise in time than Ahsoka's is going to be. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Ezra's acrobatic, but Ahsoka's
going to be literally flipping off the walls. Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, and I'm not saying that's going to provide advantage or disadvantage for either of them. I'm still thinking about that. But yeah, I think Ezra's feet are going to be firmly planted on the ground a little bit more than Ahsoka's are. Yeah, this one's a tough one. But, you know, but we're thinking like, what are we thinking? Are we thinking like...
I don't know. I'm pretty torn.
I feel like season 3 Ezra is a little weird because we also had those force powers that he was using at the beginning of season 3. I feel like we should do end of season 2 because like
I think maybe end of season 3 because not much changes after he drops the you know emo dark side act. There's not much between the beginning and the end,
but he the holocron
powers
stuff
and abilities clearly.
Yeah, see then I would say end of season 3.
I think I've come to a conclusion.
Well, I need to figure out what happens in season 3. Well, he does defeat Super Commandos in Super Commandos. He defeats the battle droids, which Ahsoka could have done also. Um he contends with Sabine, so he has wielded the lightsaber against another. Yeah, I think it's pretty clear for me, too. Go ahead, though.
I'm going to go with Ezra. I think Ezra would take this one. I think if we just look at where they are in their respective developments at this time, I think it would be close, because I think when it comes down to it, I think Ezra, season three, at this point, end of season three, I think he's farther along. He is farther along in his training and development than Ahsoka in season two. I think even though Ahsoka probably got from the Jedi Temple a greater back catalog of high quality and formal training, actually almost certainly a much larger backlog of high quality and formal training, I think by season three, Ezra had gotten more real, you know, more real kind of situation experience, a bit more dueling experience as well. And I think given that at this point, their styles are pretty similar, they're both still pretty raw and inexperienced. I think I would have to go with Ezra. I think his advantage and experience just makes that bit of a difference. But it could go either way, to be honest. But I would
in this Ezra. Situation, I would also pick Ezra, though I will say I think if you shift either of their seasons by just one, I think everything
that would
changes.
Completely change the calculus, because Ahsoka at the end of season three is night and day from Ahsoka at the end of season.
Because I think if you would shift it, if you would shift it to Ahsoka season three, then she wins. I think if you keep Ahsoka season two and then shift Ezra back to two, I think Ahsoka also wins.
Agreed.
By that metric.
Agreed.
But I think if we're doing two versus three, I think Ezra at that point has more experience and is a bit more confident in himself. But two versus three, I think that Ezra probably ekes it out. Again, could go either way, really. It would be very close, but if they're both the same season of their show, I'd usually bet on Ahsoka, but given that Ezra is in a later season of his development than Ahsoka is, then I go with Ezra just because of how both of them get more confident as they go along and gain more skills and more adaptability as they go along.
Yeah, agreed. Agreed.
Yeah. All right. Let's see. All right, let's do one final one, and I'm actually going to steal one of yours. I'm going to do one of yours because I like this one a little bit better than some of mine, even though mine are interesting.
Okay.
But let's do this one. Let's do TCW Dooku versus Rebels Maul for the last one.
Oh, Clone Wars Dooku, Rebels Maul.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we're thinking like S6 Dooku, because we don't see Dooku in 7. So like S6 Dooku versus like time of versus like twin sons Maul, basically is what we're saying.
Yeah, I think so. I think.
Yeah. Well, first of all, we'll get to both of their. Dooku is wildly experienced. One of the best lightsaber duelists of his time. I would say probably top three along with Mace Windu and Obi-Wan Kenobi in terms of just raw lightsaber skill. Makashi specialist, but he is so good at Makashi. He was the preeminent master of that form at the time. So good that I think he compensated effectively for a lot of Makashi's perceived weaknesses as a form. Immensely powerful in the Force. Like, immensely powerful in the Force.
I think if you just look at Revenge of the Sith, for example, you don't really get the full measure of Dooku. If you look at the Clone Wars, especially like later seasons of the Clone Wars, I'm thinking especially about that one duel where he's going up against Anakin in season 6. I think him versus, I can't remember which arc it is, but him versus Anakin and Obi-Wan together, you know, on the ship, like, You know what I'm talking about, right?
I don't know which one you're like. That could literally be like five different arcs.
Look, Vert, he's a bad motherfucker, man. I used to underrate Dooku a little bit. He's
oh,
a
yeah.
bad motherfucker, man.
He is. A, he is
Pardon
a,
my French. I had
he
to
is
say
absolutely
it.
A bad motherfucker. He is like he is. Yeah, you know, incredibly skilled with Force lightning, which, despite being trained as a Jedi his whole entire goddamn life, you know, he pulls out that shit all the time during clones and AOTC and TCW like it's nothing. Like he wasn't trained in that. He had to train himself. Like Sidious and him had to build that up from scratch because, you know, for the first 70 years of his life he was a Jedi. But
Although
you know,
I think the Jedi skills, if someone chooses to go to the dark side, I think the Jedi skill set translates pretty smoothly towards someone choosing to
absolutely.
use
And
it
I'm
for
not
less
saying
than
that
noble purposes.
I'm not saying that he never had the power when he was a Jedi to use Force lightning. I'm just saying that activating a dark side skill set part of your mind is different when you've been on the light side all your life.
Okay, that's fair. That is fair.
And you know, Anakin, for example, Anakin, when Anakin turns, like, you know, like, he's really able to find that rage within himself to do things like force choking and, you
Oh, it was
know,
always
like,
there.
throw his, yeah, but like, Dooku doesn't even get that pissed off at Yoda. And he just throws some force lightning from his hand like it's nothing. And yeah, Yoda catches it, but he's Yoda. Yeah, he's incredibly skilled at lightsaber combat. Yeah, Yoda was his only superior in lightsaber in a duel in the Order, and Mace Windu was his only equal. Yeah, and yeah, extremely skilled in both lightning and telekinetic powers. Just a powerhouse of a fighter. He is like, by the time he dies, he's like 80. I forget exactly how old he is, but he is getting up there in age. There's no denying that. I think he's actually older than Sidious, which makes that dynamic a little weirder if you think about it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He is. I remember that. Yeah. That's true. That's
Yeah.
true.
Yeah. He's 83 by the time he dies, but you know,
It doesn't stop him, though, man.
The Force
It
can
doesn't
compensate
stop
that for
him.
that quite a bit. But yeah, he's ludicrously powerful. You know how much of a fan I am of his as a character, and I also think he's just an incredibly powerful fighter as well.
Oh, yeah. Just one more testament to Dooku in the Clone Wars. He's asleep. He gets ambushed by three invisible lightsaber wielding night sisters
Struck by a
who
fucking
hit
poison
who
dart? Fucking by
who yeah
like a.
they hit him with a they hit him with a poison dart, and it's a 3-on-1 and they're invisible, and he
And one of them
still
is Ventress.
humiliates
And
them,
one
and
of
one of
them
them
is
is Ventress.
Ventress.
Granted, I don't, but he humiliates them, like he blasts
He
them out the
makes
window with Sith
fools out
lightning.
of them. He makes
He
fools
like
like it's nothing.
I think that to me might actually be the most impressive Dooku moment. When you, I
Yeah.
think that might be it.
I
I'm
will
just thinking
also
about
just
it.
say
Like,
this too.
I mean, come on.
I will also just say this too. And a lot of people like, I know if Jared were listening to this right now, he would absolutely scream at me because of how wrong he thinks I am. But it is true that Anakin beat him in Revenge of the Sith. But I actually think about that as the exception to the rule, not the rule.
Yeah, I agree. I
Like,
think
in
Anakin.
most other fights, look at him fighting against Anakin and Obi-Wan in the vast majority of other parts of TCW. He is
It was
either
only after
winning
Anakin had.
or like really or really putting up a good fight and content. Like, there's no point on which, like, in any TCW fights. Maybe the one on Naboo in season 4. Maybe. But even that's like circumstantial and because of a bunch of other stuff.
Yeah, I think that
Can you tell me
it's
that
only after
Anakin
Anakin
really had a
fully.
really good shot against Dooku?
It's only after Anakin, you know, taps into his rage into the dark side that he's able to take down Dooku.
Yeah, and that's what happens in season 4 of TCW too. He's still so mad that the council lied to him about Obi-Wan and blah blah blah, and that's how he almost defeats Dooku then, and he doesn't even do it. He doesn't even defeat Dooku then. Want to go to Maul now?
Yeah, so Maul's an interesting case in this one, because
yeah.
Maul's an interesting character. He's one of the only characters where you get three very, very different, distinct
Oh yeah.
versions
TPM
of Maul,
Maul,
widely
TPM
separated.
Maul, TCW Maul, and SWR Maul are three different characters. Like, they just are. And when we have to
Elam,
evaluate, yeah.
I'm sorry, but I'm gonna have to call you out. Abbreviating Rebels to SWR is the most un it's the most unnecessary thing I've ever heard. I'm sorry. You can cut that out if you want. I just thought
yeah,
it was funny.
That's
I know
whatever. I don't care.
You're going for the triple
Triple
abbreviation. I
initial,
respect it.
yeah. Sorry, I don't.
Yeah.
I don't really care. I
No, don't worry
like
about
it.
it. Don't
Wasn't
worry about
like,
it. It
yeah.
doesn't matter.
It
I don't care.
wasn't
Honestly, it's
something
funny.
about like that I was like really hung up upon. I'm just saying, like, those three characters are
Yeah,
completely different
they're
characters.
different. So at
And
this point,
yeah, but
he.
at this point,
He
I'm
goes
trying to
to
think.
town on the Inquisitors. He pretty much has his way with them, for starters.
Yeah,
So as a baseline,
he
that's pretty high.
yeah, I will say that he is decisively better than fifth, than seventh, than eighth. Two of which he directly kills, and the other one of which he indirectly kills.
Yeah.
Though I will say that, and again, not to discount Maul's strength, because he's very strong on the Force. But Ahsoka, Kanan, and Ezra were also there fighting with him.
They were there.
And what he was able to do so effectively was able to split them up apart from each other. Because it was very much like, oh, isolate fifth from the rest of the group, stabity stab. Isolate seven from the rest of the group, stabity stab. And then eighth kind of took care of himself. But he's incredibly powerful. He gets away with the stunt of blinding Kanan, which neither Ahsoka or Kanan really is suspected. And that took a lot of cunning strategy. And you know, he's able to contend with Kanan and Ezra throughout season three. And then of course we get to the end of season three. And I think all of our entire perceptions of his characters changed with literally three flashes of lightsabers.
Oh yeah.
One, two, stab.
I don't really know how that moment fits into all this, to be honest. It's difficult because it's such a, that's not really a fight. It's something else.
Oh, it's not a fight.
You
it's,
know, in
it,
the
it,
story,
it, yeah.
Like, to, I almost feel like that shouldn't really be considered for this because it's so.
I feel like
I don't
yeah,
know, it's so
I feel like we
not.
have to. I'm not saying that we have to wait it, but like I feel like we still have to consider it. I feel like because that is at least for me about Maul's ceiling. That even
I don't know. I
that
think that's
even
kind
old
of a
decrepit Obi-Wan at that point, who is like, you know, not to dog on Obi-Wan too much, but I'm just saying this is not Kenobi Obi-Wan. This is not the same Obi-Wan who defeated Vader in part six. This is him about 5-6 years later. He looks almost exactly like the Ben we know from New Hope, who, you know, he obviously trains with the Force, I assume now after what happens in Kenobi, but still he is living as a hermit on a desert planet. Where, you know, lightsabers aren't really seen, other than his, of course. And he defeats Maul in three strikes.
But at the same point, I think if we look at it, I think Maul defeats himself as much as Obi-Wan defeats him in that fight, to be honest. You know, because he's trying to do the same move that he did to Qui-Gon all those years ago, clearly. And I think that was a moment for the story and a personal moment, an emotional moment for those two characters. I think if it was actually just, if he hadn't tried to do that move for whatever reason, the hilt slam, double slam into the chest. If he hadn't tried to do that move, I think he could have won the duel had he played it like a reasonable person. But he didn't, so we'll never know. But with that in mind, I think that moment is more than a duel.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. Look, what's his? Because I'd say Zhuya probably for Maul, Berserker Zhuya, Nine Man quite a bit because of the because of the double blade. Zhuya, Nine Man. I think that's maybe because of the extra flips and spin, a little bit of a Taru in there. But nothing, like, we have very two different philosophies on lightsabers. Because Maul uses it as, like, you know, this hammer, basically. Maul uses it as a hammer, even when he has a double blade lightsaber. And Dooku uses it as the sword, like, that it is.
Yeah. I mean, okay, we go back to the fact that it's up against Dooku. Maul, at this point, he was clearly... It's hard to compare Maul to his... I think Maul in his prime might be during the Clone Wars at some point. He was clearly very powerful in the Force.
I'm not sure if his prime is in TCW or Rebels, but yeah.
Yeah. Either way, I don't think he's a match for Dooku. No, I don't either. It could be close, but it's not very close because we talked a lot about Dooku. We know what he's capable of. I think in terms of pure dueling prowess, Dooku takes the cake.
Yeah, I think that for me, this fight is going to be basically Dooku versus Savage in TCW. But if Savage had twice the power, skill, and experience.
Yeah, I think Maul is going to be harder at this point.
Going to be harder for Dooku, but I think ultimately the same things generally that brings Savage down against people like Dooku would bring Maul down against Dooku because he's just that much of a berserker, and you can't be a berserker against Dooku unless you have that much power, which Maul does not.
Yeah, I think Maul, you know, his style, you know, where he is in the Clone Wars, or in at least given what we see, he loves these, you know, he loves these big, aggressive, sweeping motions, these leaps and these, you know, these big, big flourishes, really taking advantage of the saber staff, you know, taking up space, putting his opponents off balance. That might work against someone with very formal training, but someone much, a bit lesser than Dooku, or quite a bit lesser than Dooku. But that's not going to work against Dooku because he's Dooku.
Yeah, one of the interesting things about Dooku that I think that is interesting, and that I think he does actually quite much better than both Maul and Vader, though I think Vader does it well too. I think Maul's just particularly bad at this, is that, yeah, he's a dark side force user, and yeah, he can use his rage, but he is not like, he doesn't have his rage completely possess him the way Maul does. Like, you know, sometimes you,
oh,
with
not
Maul,
even
you
close.
Don't
not even
you,
close.
Sometimes with Maul, you don't know whether you're fighting a person or an animal. With Dooku, you're fighting a person, a very evil person, but a person nonetheless. And, you know, think of all of the times that Dooku has gotten visibly shaken in fights. You could probably count them on one hand.
I think just Anakin a couple times late in the Clone Wars, and obviously in Revenge of the Sith, and that's it. And I think for the record, I'd say Yoda and AOTC. Yeah, maybe Yoda. I don't think this particularly changes the balance much. But for the record, I think by the time Rebels rolls around, I think Maul's fighting style isn't as much about, you know, pure, you know, it's not much about that, like, you know, pure lose your mind ferocity. I think he becomes a little different at that point. But still, I think Dooku's taking this one.
I don't think he's maybe as primal as he was in TCW, but here's the thing. He's more primal than Dooku will ever have a stand any chance of being in Rebels.
Yeah.
And
still though, I don't, sorry, go ahead.
And I think that Dooku is going to see Maul, and he's going to like watch him literally like fucking charge up to him, and he's just gonna take it from there. I think that Maul is absolutely somebody who, you know, we've seen his weakness against Lightning before. Look at Sidious. I think Lightning is gonna do
once it. He was already bested.
That's true, but still. I think that Lightning's gonna do it. I think that Dooku's obvious lightsaber prowess, and I think a bit more power in the Force as well. I think just very simply, Maul is outclassed.
Yeah, I think a lot of these fights are close and could go, and like I could see either side winning, even though I think one has a better case, and even though I think pretty highly of Maul's skills and abilities, but I genuinely don't see him winning this one.
Yeah, I don't see a scenario in which he wins. Yeah, I don't think he realistically wins this one. I don't think there's any realistic scenario where he wins this. I just don't.
Yeah, I think it's harder to imagine him winning this than any of the losers, than any of the other ones that we've declared loser losing. Like, I think Sabine's more likely to beat Rex.
Oh, absolutely.
Than Maul is to beat Dooku.
Maybe Ki-Adi and Aang,
but even that one, yeah, I just think
that one I'm not exactly sure about.
Yeah, and I don't necessarily think that it's not close, because I do think this would be reasonably close, or at least
I don't think this would
close.
Be a landslide, but I think this would be definitive in Dooku's favor.
This wouldn't be a landslide; it would be definitive in Dooku's favor, but as it could be as close as can be, and I just don't see an area in which Maul has some kind of advantage that he could really, because Dooku's just that good of a duelist,
yeah,
and he's got the Force prowess to back it up. Yeah.
The only thing that Maul has,
I just don't see it for
the advantage of Dooku, is physicality. He's about 30 years younger than Dooku is, and he's a Brock and half robot. But even it's like Dooku is that much better with the Force, and that much more connected with the Force than Maul. That I don't seem that matter a whole lot.
Yeah, if Dooku can contain someone like Anakin, if he can contain someone like Savage, I think he can contain Maul. Even though I think Maul has more physicality.
Yeah.
Than Anakin, but I still think he has more physicality, but less overall prowess than Anakin. More, less like raw Force power, maybe, than Anakin. But
yeah.
It's also, Dooku. I don't need to explain it anymore. It's clearly Dooku.
Also, there's one other piece of evidence I'm going to use in my favor of Dooku. I want you to watch and listen very closely, Jacob. Fuck Darth Maul. Oh, my homies hate Darth Maul.
I knew you were going to do it. I knew there was a weird lack of Darth Maul hatred coming from you this whole time, Eli. I knew you were waiting for something.
But like, seriously, even beyond the fact that I don't like Darth Maul as a character, I still, like, even if that wasn't true, I still think that Dooku is going to win.
Fair enough.
It just happens to be a character that I love versus a character I very much do not like. But fuck Darth Maul. All my homies hate Darth Maul. But I think that's gonna, I think with the ending of that one, I think we should end it here.
Yeah, I think that's we gonna, should. I think that'll be
that's
it.
That's gonna be it for this episode of Star Wars in a Galaxy. Hope you enjoy this different type of episode. Next week we are going to be going back to some deleted scenes for the next two seasons of Star Wars, the Clone Wars seasons 3 and 4. We're very excited to be going back to that. In the meantime, you can follow us on Twitter at In a Galaxy Pod, Instagram at Star Wars In a Galaxy. Follow my personal Twitter account at OchiFan327. You can listen to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, wherever you listen to your podcast, we will be there. If we're not, email us, swinagalaxy@gmail.com. You can also email us any trivia or fun facts or whatever questions you want to ask us. We do really appreciate hearing from listeners. Let's see what else is going on. You can follow Epic Confrontations, our spinoff show, at In a Galaxy Trivia on Twitter and on the Star Wars In a Galaxy YouTube channel. As you know, we did the rematch a few weeks ago. When we post this, it will have been a few weeks ago. Thanks for all the support on that. We're looking forward. I think Ryan's versus Cable is going to be towards the end of May because of scheduling stuff, but it's still be coming. And either way, I think all there's left to say is may the force be with you.
Always.
Always.